back to our stage in Potsdam. Sven is a PhD student in Potsdam. He's researching energy-aware operating systems and how to control the energy demand of memory operations. In his free time, he mentors a local coder dojo to teach kids the marvels of computing. And you can meet him from time to time at FOSS meetups on energy efficiency and in and around Berlin.
Okay.
Your word.
Thank you for the introduction. Is this working? Can you see my screen? Actually, you can. It's just a black slide. So my computer is not doing anything meaningful at the moment, yet still it's using energy. Just to give you this black screen and to give it you on the stream and maybe to transfer my audio. But this is boring and we all want to use less energy, or at least if we need to use it, maybe do so while the sun is shining and the wind is blowing so we have some renewables. But cutting the energy demand of idle systems is a tricky task. This is left to hardware developers or operating system developers. So let's do something. Let's do something nice. Let's shine up some lights. As I pushed a button here, there were multiple actions going on my computer. So my SSD was not spinning up, but giving some data back to my presentation tool. Some sockets were socketing and some transistors were screaming along all to give me this very nice bright sky here. And if I push a button, this also has another effect, like putting a fairy dust on there. So every click I do, every action I perform on my computer has some work related to it, and this work requires energy. And now the question is, how much energy does each action require? And maybe if we can start to measure it, we can compare and start to cut it down. I could give you now an introduction on how to measure the energy demand of your software, but you can all use Google or DuckDuckGo or whatever search engine you like, and you will find plenty of tutorials on how to do this. And in this talk, I'm just giving you some insight of all the mistakes I made before, so you don't shoot yourself into the foot like I did. I want to talk about some common misconceptions when you're doing energy assessments of your software, or maybe more accessible, what to keep in mind when you're measuring your software's energy demand. But let's start out again with some basic physics. Maybe you remember from physics class in school that the energy requirement of an operation is the integral over the power demand over time from a certain start point in time to an end point of time. Okay, that's maybe the most complex slide in here. Let's break it down. So the metric E stands for energy, which is typically measured in joule. And this metric answers us questions like, how long will our battery going to last? Or how high our electricity bill will be? Or maybe, if we're interested in this, what is the carbon footprint of my software when I'm running it? Another interesting thing is the right-hand side, which is the power demand of an operation. This is typically measured in watts and is not something we think about so often as typical software developers. This is maybe left to data center operators when they want to get a glimpse of what the power supply limits are of operations, or maybe how much heat dissipation they have to build in, so the cooling facilities they have to somehow factor. So given this information, now let's talk about the misconceptions we can do why we want to somehow find E of a certain operation. And the first misconception is a very simple one. Quite often we assume that the computer is somehow simply a box with some screen attached and a keyboard, which is good here in case of my laptop, this is true, but my cell phone maybe doesn't have a keyboard, and computers can come in all different kinds of shapes, like some attached to another USB port, then giving you additional compute resources, or you have tiny microcontrollers like those here in the microphone, and when I start cutting the energy demand of a microcontroller, due to the economy of scale, I can cut joules and joules of energy in the long term. Maybe I have an integrated GPU on some development boards, maybe I have a computer, quite old-fashioned, or maybe I have even a big high-end server system which does not only come with multiple CPUs and some dedicated GPUs for computation, but also have some additional complicated compute devices like FPGAs. And all those different devices have very different power characteristics and energy characteristics. And just to show it to you, I wrote a small program, which is basically a convolution filter. So small hotspots are appearing all over the place, and then the heat is dissipating from one simulated cell to another. And this simulation was implemented by me on different compute platforms, so one time on a GPU, on a CPU, and on an FPGA. And when you look at it, you will find that I'm using quite different intake of joules per million cells, depending on the compute device. Now, you could argue that maybe my implementation was not perfect. Of course, it wasn't. It was written by me. Or maybe you can say that I didn't really measure, because here I'm just taking the power draw as given by the specification of the compute device. So maybe the GPU wasn't using 60 watt at each moment in time. So we now learned there's a difference between different compute devices, but now we really want to measure what's going on in one particular one. And here's another thing with us software people. Typically, we take a ruler, hold it to maybe this laptop, and then we can say, oh, okay, this is so and so many millimeters long. So we always think what we measure is about right. But measurement devices are skewed. When we want to measure the energy demand of software, there are two main ways of building a measurement device. The first one is an actual physical measurement. So we have maybe a shunt, or in German, Nebenwiderstand, where we measure the voltage drop over it, or we build a Hall effect sensor, which is using a magnetic field, which is very good if you're building some CMOS transistors. You can almost get it for free built in there. So it's very nice. You can build one of those and then have very accurate, very timely related measurements of some current draw or of the total power draw of your circuit. But this includes somehow to alter your setup. And maybe your setup is so tiny that maybe a human hair compares to it like a Nord Stream 2 pipeline, so it's a little bit difficult to put it in there if you don't have the space. For this reason, especially in embedded platforms and historically, people have been using logical measurements. So somehow they had some physical initial setup where they made some correlations between hardware performance counters, which gave you the number of instructions issued per second, or maybe number of cache references or cache misses. And then using this correlation, they had some model of the energy demand of the software, which is good. I mean, you don't have to alter your circuits, but of course, a model can be error-prone. And here's the thing. If any of you ever heard of RAPL, or REPL, the quite common measurement facilities on Intel CPUs, they used to be on the right-hand side. So people were looking at it and thought, okay, maybe it's giving me some joules. Maybe this is right, but in fact, it was just a model. So there were some early mistakes in earlier papers. The second thing when we start thinking about measurement facilities is that they are covering different domains. And you can zoom in using your measurement maybe for the entire system. So you're intercepting the wall socket and maybe your compute device, and then you can get the entire energy consumption of your computer. Like maybe you know one of those smart plugs which typically give you the power draw on a small LCD display, and you can hack it into your computer, or you can maybe get it via MTTQ, or maybe have a USB transfer to get the data out there. This is good, but of course gives you the whole system and not maybe the particular part which is caused by your program. You can also find, especially in mobile devices, that very early measurements often use the battery levels. So they started an operation, looked at the battery current, the battery voltage, finished the operation, and after this one was done, looked at it again, and using this difference, they could say, okay, maybe we used so many milliampere hours. Some better details are being obtained if you're building chips onto your board. Quite often you can find the IPMI or the base management control counters in data centers. So if you're running a data center, maybe look it up. Those are typically the counters you want to use. They have a very coarse resolution, often in the second range, but it's quite good, and they even can give you distinct power rails, so maybe you can get some information often in the storage or the CPU or the memory. And the best, if you have, are on-chip measurements, so as the aforementioned REPL counters. Also, if you're in the IBM domain, there are some, and if you're using some modern Apple computers, they also have very nice counters with the Apple Silicon chips. So you have very high detail rates there, but you're missing a lot of other things, like, for example, the fans or the system on a chip. And even now having those counters, we were talking about that we want to have the energy demand, which is also, if you think about, the area under the curve of the power demand over time. And this is not the power consumption of my entire program. Of course, I should exclude everything before the starting time of an operation and after the end time of an operation, which is maybe tricky if I cannot somehow correlate the measurement of my device with my actual software running. And maybe I'm also not interested in some baseline and I have to subtract it and just measure an idle system beforehand and then get the difference of what is actually caused by my program. And I'm interested in this curve, but typically I do not have it, but rather sampling points, which are somehow hopefully equidistant. But if I'm looking at measurement devices, I brought one actually. So for example, this is like one of those smart meters, and you can plug your device in here and some power supply running to the wall socket. And then the question is, where do they get their clock from? And the answer is from the wall socket. So here in Europe, it would measure at 50 hertz. If I plug it in the United States, then I'm ending up with 60 hertz. So do not trust your measurement device, and maybe your sampling is not so equidistant. And if you're starting then to do some numerical iterations on it or just multiplying up all the tiny squares, you're left with an error. And not only the sampling distance might change, but also there's noise, possibly. And also there might be the chance that your sampling frequency is just too small and you're missing some power peaks. This is Shannon calling, so to somehow reduce this, we would need to increase the sampling frequency to run at least twice the clock speed of our GPU or CPU, which is difficult, to say the least. And even then, given all those and keeping those in mind, maybe our sensors are still somehow skewed. So I was talking of the ruler before, which I want to use to measure maybe the size of this laptop. What if this was somehow bent due to heat or whatever? Or maybe the markings are just off. A case of this is, for example, what I found on some NVIDIA development boards, which is comparable to some car devices, or maybe the Nintendo Switch actually also looks a little bit like this. And what I can see here are different power rails. So blue stands for the CPU, orange stands for the GPU, and red stands for the memory access. And what I implemented here was, again, this convolution problem. One time running on the CPU, marked with OpenMP on the left-hand side, and the other one running on the GPU, which I implemented using CUDA. And the dashed lines mark the actual point in time where I started and ended the workload. And now doing some numerical integration, I can see, okay, my OpenMP implementation used about, roughly 9 joules more than the GPU implementation. So in this system, I should always try to use the GPU for this kind of workload. But if we take a closer look at those charts, we can find that there's actually some jitter going on, so maybe the signal wasn't so good. And more importantly, those curved slopes. So even though the workload ended, the power meters were still reporting that there was some power intake. And the reason for this is being that the power measurement sensors built on those are averaging the values over time. So the noise on the left-hand side is maybe too much, and they decided, okay, let's move some sliding window over our data and just report the averaged values. If I start integrating on this, I'm just getting nonsense. So this is not good. Maybe use a second measurement device. Use one of those external ones, plug them in, And let's see what's going on here. So again, we can see the OpenMP implementation takes a little bit longer, uses a little bit more energy, has also very high jitter, but the difference is not as high anymore. Because here we see the thing, I wasn't really thinking about the idle system. So if I want to tell, okay, maybe this is using n percentage points less than the other, then I should maybe factor in the baseline coming from idle system. And also I can see the discrepancy between the external measurements and the internal ones. So for example, the carrier board or the fan supply, or what just the power supply of the system was using, which is also energy used to do my work, but not really caused by my software to be run. And if I move my workload from those tiny devices to maybe one of those big end server systems, I actually found that, okay, let's have a look. Oh, here the GPU implementation is not as efficient as the CPU version. So on this system, run on the CPU. But there's another thing going on. Have a look at this line. So although my measurement was done, after the workload finished, the power draw remained high. This was the storage system still working, this was the fan still running, and this was the operating system keeping the system just active and preventing it from going to sleep again. So even though my workload ended, and even though I'm saying now, okay, maybe this is not related to me anymore, there is still an ongoing effect of my hardware, of my software in the hardware, which I somehow am accountable for. And if I want to cut the energy demand or just assess it, I need to also think about what are the lingering effects after running my program. So a good thing is always plot your data, have a look at it, and think if you can somehow improve your measurements just by looking at the graphs. And some other hints. Just to recap what I was saying before, look at the idle system before. Is it relevant to your measurements? Are you comparing apples and oranges if you're not taking it into account, or maybe you should exclude it? Second, do not what I did. Do not only run your workload once, but rather run it multiple times. So you can use statistics and also use some warm-up runs in before and throw them away because they're typically outliers. Then think about what your measurement facilities covers. If they include fans and carrier boards and storage systems, or if you're just interested into the particular CPU, then try to keep your system under test silent, because all aforementioned counters and all aforementioned tools, and most of them you will find Googling, are measuring your entire system. So we somehow managed for time and memory to ask the operating system, please tell me how much CPU time, how much memory you were using for this particular process. But so far, we failed doing this for energy. So in turn, when I'm now hitting this button again, maybe if I were running a program to measure the energy demand, I would not count whatever action I'm causing on another part of the computer, like the SSD. This will not be taken into account, and you will have to somehow keep your system silent to have exclusive use of it if you want to use proper attribution for your program actions. And maybe measure your measurements so you know what's going on, and if by measuring you somehow are skewing your own system. So measure an idle system maybe with an external and an internal measurement tool. Okay, misconception number three. Which is of particular interest to me, because quite often I find when consulting people or just listening to discussions that they tell me, my program runs 5 times faster than before, hence I'm using just 1/5 of the energy. Which is strange. If I was telling you, this car is driving 5 times faster, hence it's just using 1/5 of the fuel, you would be quite surprised. The reason for people thinking is that they remember this one formula where they say, okay, I cut down the time, therefore the total energy is smaller, right? But the answer is, of course, well, if you run faster, you still end up using more energy. So we need better metrics. And to motivate this and just give an example, here's some work by some colleagues of mine who were looking on a very small microcontroller where they were using a benchmark suite for embedded platforms. And we're switching between low power and high power modes. And you can see that for the low power modes, compared to the high power ones, do I have a mouse? No, I don't have. Oh, no, I don't. Anyway, you can see that the energy demand for the normal power mode was actually about like 65% less, but the runtime was 90% increased. So there was no linear correlation between the cut energy demand and the time. And if you look at different workloads with different characteristics, you can see that there is no functional correlation between those two. So you cannot say by cutting 90% of time, you are cutting always like two-thirds of the energy demand. And in some cases, although this workload was running faster, it was even using more energy, which is coming back to our car example from before. So we need a better metric. The same group used a very nice workload here. They compiled the Linux kernel. And we're doing so at different clock rates of their GPU. So they were overclocking and underclocking their GPU and also using the normal operational range. And on the gray line, you can see the compilation time being reduced over time. So the faster the CPU was running, the less time they were using. But the energy demand was increasing. Not only the power demand, but the actual energy demand here. And if we want to talk about a sweet spot to find, this chart is difficult to read. Maybe we need to use another metric. So maybe some of you have heard before of the energy delayed squared product. I'm going to talk about it in a second. But the thing is, if we multiply those two graphs, actually the time two times in there, then we can say, okay, if I'm using my Ubuntu configuration by default, I'm somehow ending up on the right-hand side, which is maybe not optimal, and there's a certain sweet spot where I have like the best performance per invested joule somewhere around those 3.5 gigahertz on the system. So we need other metrics, and typically here are the metrics I would recommend for you using in case you want to start some scientific discussion on whether or not your software is energy efficient or not. Those are all very fancy names, and they typically read like this, that you have either the power delayed product or the energy delayed product, or the energy delayed squared or cubic product, which means that you're taking the average power consumption over time and multiply it with time. And then for each step, you factor in once more the time to somehow emphasize more on the time factor in there and not only look at the energy. Those metrics do not really have some good equal understandings for you as a human. So the unit of this down there is joules per cubic seconds. I don't even know what this should mean, but you somehow can use them to still compare different systems. So the power delayed product is maybe just important for electrical engineers when they're looking at switching events in the hardware, and only is of good value if you have some fixed voltage and you do not change this over time. The energy delayed product is actually quite good because it puts in equal weights for the energy demand and for the time demand or performance. But if your system is changing the voltage or the frequency over time, which, for example, this computer is doing, it's clocking up and down depending on demand, then this metric will not be good for you. Better one is to multiply in the time once more. And this is very good if I'm comparing one system which is changing over time and only looking at this. If I'm looking at different systems and I want to compare, for example, now this laptop with some embedded boards on or the FPGA, then the energy delayed cubic product is maybe the one of interest. This is commonly used in high performance computing and other areas where people are very much into performance, therefore they factor in time also once more. There's a reading list down here. If you want, you can pause the screen and read up on this literature. But it's not so important. More important are the takeaways of what we've talked about so far. So first of all, think about what your computing hardware looks like. what is in there and what different effects those components are having on your software and your software is having on those components. Then second, measure, remeasure, and compare your measurements. So do not trust any numbers which come out of any computer, of any measurement facility, but really look at them and maybe try to interpret if they are somehow skewed. And last but not least, do not think that execution time is a good drop-in replacement for energy readings. This is the first breaking point of my presentation, so this is supposed to be the end, but I knew that I'm talking too fast anyways. This is why I was preparing some appendix on how you can actually do energy measurements. So in case you want to start measuring today, here is maybe some interesting stuff for you. If you are running some Intel-based machine or AMD also, then you can always use the running average power limit counters, which I have been mentioning so often in this talk before. Since Sandy Bridge, which is like 2011, I think, they've been available and used to be this logical model, but by now they are real physical hardware sensors which you can use. There are special registers which count the energy consumption, not the power draw. So they are doing this integration for you already and are running at about 1 millisecond resolution, which means when you take the average AMD 64 register and multiply it with 1 millisecond, then you find out that they typically wrap around after 60 seconds. So do not expect your measurements to be accurate when you're measuring longer than 60 seconds, unless you're taking precautions or using the Linux kernel to access it. So you can access it using dedicated registers, or the Linux kernel has, for example, the perf event open interface, which you can use to also read those. So just Google up RAPL and Linux perf, and you can find ready-to-go code, which is very nice. And there's some person here, I was not linking his page, but they are really up to keeping an open documentation of all the ongoing changes which Intel puts up in their 1,000-page manuals to you to be accessible and to find out how to do it right. And AMD was also then somehow forced to implement some semi-compatible interface, and they've been putting it up. So the numbers of the registers are a little bit different, but you can still use them, although they are not using all the same domains. And what do I mean by domains? RAPL comes with traditionally 4, now 5 different domains. So you can get the energy consumption per core. You can get the energy consumption of the integrated GPU, so the Iris GPU, for example. You can get the energy consumption of the memory controller, and you can get the memory consumption of the entire AND core, so the CPU core, the GPU core, and all the caches in there, which are not included in the core package. And those different planes are the different zones you can measure in your CPU, and you can see, okay, maybe this code emphasizes more the memory, or maybe this code emphasizes more the CPU running. And there you can start making optimizations in your software. If you are running on some development boards, like I was showing before, those NVIDIA Jetson boards, they come equipped with those INA power monitors. They were nice. They have 3 channels, and there are 2 in there. But as I've shown before, they average their power draw over time. And quite often, and this is typical for many embedded boards, you will find them somehow connected to your Linux system using an I2C bus, and you can read them out from your SysFS. And here, refer to manual or speak up to me. There's an ongoing list, which I also maintain, of different devices and how to access them there. I was showing before this external measurement tool, which is very nice because it has a very good resolution and a very high sampling frequency, which is still phase locked to the line frequency coming out of your wall socket. But you can read out the power supply via USB, and we are using those to measure those big end server systems, because 15 amps times 230 volts, this is quite okay to measure even bigger server systems. If you want to go smaller, There are plenty of embedded devices, for example, the ATC2991 or whatever the successors might be right now. You can build some self-controlled Arduino controllers in there and transfer data in and out of them, and so intercept even additional devices. And maybe you can even measure the energy demand of your USB keyboard if you're interested. All those are measuring the power demand, and I was talking before about the problem that maybe you are missing peak powers. So a better way of approaching this is not measuring power, but rather energy. And here a colleague of mine also built one of those devices, which is measuring the actual energy demand using a physical system. So they're having two capacitors, they're charging up and discharging, taking turns, and with each round, they are increasing a simple counter register. And so you can know how many energy rounds were consumed, and you have a physical integration over time. So if you want to measure really accurate and you know that maybe your workload or embedded board has a lot of power peaks, then this is the one to go. And if you are looking at all the different devices I've been talking about, compute devices and measurement facilities, you can find that the support matrix is rather sparse. So there's not one measurement device to rule them all. And it's quite difficult to integrate them and then also sync your workload with the execution start and end time. And that's why I came up with this tool, Pinpoint. You can find it on GitHub, and please open up some issues and report bugs, because for a long time I was the only person using this software, and now other people are doing so. I'm getting reports what's not going on, so this is good. This is one of the many tools which are trying to aggregate different measurement facilities, so you can start using them and finding out what's going on in your code. And it's a little bit inspired by the Linux Perf utility, just supporting more things than just the REPL platform. Okay, this is all I have for today. Here is some basic insights on what could go wrong when taking energy measurements, and also some little pointers on how to research, how to do your own measurements. And if you are up to any questions, I'm very happy to answer them right now.
For the questions, I checked already the chat rooms online. I haven't seen any questions there. Okay. So maybe one of you here have a question. I don't think they have questions.
Okay. Oh, I see a movement. Is somebody running to the mic?
We got a question.
Hi.
Hi. So thanks for the talk. Are you seeing any development in, like, including energy consumption in the timing utilities already available for measuring processes?
Yeah, like I see progress, and there are tools. There's, for example, the one called whatever a diving bell is in French, Scafandra, I think. This is one which is looking at time slices, but they're ignoring anything which is like request packages going out of the kernel, so anything going to the hard disk or so. It's simply not trackable. The thing is that operating systems nowadays are just a big mess, and it's difficult to track every operation. And you would need to rebuild entire operating systems about the idea of measuring just this and tracking every operations. And then tracking also is cost intensive, and time comes easy because time's running anyways. So it's going on. The other one is PowerTop, which is also quite popular, is using lots of aforementioned counters before, and it's looking at the run queue of the Linux kernel. So also then using time as a correlation, and then attributing the overall energy demand to the time slices each process has. So those are the two ways I would go to. Otherwise, your activity monitor on Apple does basically the same. So if I open this up now, it's looking at